If somebody's laying on the ground after a fall and their skin looks good, that's fine. The next day, their skin could be fine. And on that day three, they have this massive bruise to a bony area. That's not to say that something was done wrong. That could simply be the deep tissue injury manifesting.
Hey out there, welcome back to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob. I will be your host for this episode. We are having a wonderful conversation about deep tissue injuries, but we're certainly not doing that alone. We have the fantastic Bridget Carey on the show. And again, you're going to want to stick around for the entire thing because this is one of those where it's like you're going to be jotting down notes as you're driving down. Well, don't jot down notes as you're driving in your car, but pull over to the, if you're in Atlanta, pull over to the QT and take your notes. QT is amazing. Like, I love QT. It's got the cheapest gas. Like, I don't know. Is QT everywhere? I feel like I only see QTs in Georgia, but that could just be me being ignorant. QT is an amazing gas station. It has this, it basically has an entire, I don't know, ecosystem. It's like Buc-ee's. It's kind of like, well, I don't want to say that for people that love Buc-ee's. It's not as big as Buc-ee's, but I love it. Anyway, this is way too much talking about gas stations. Anyway, pull over, take notes. It's going to be an amazing episode. But right now it's time for the nursing home regulation question of the week and your opportunity to win a Nursing Home Abuse Podcast mug. Well, Rob, how do I do that, you might ask? Well, it's very easy. And I put that in the most, you know, sarcastic quotation, air quotation marks that I can. To win this mug, you have to go to our TikTok, which is at Justice for Residents. Find the question of the week video. So you're going to be looking for the, you're going to look for a thumbnail that has flags in it. It'd be the, specifically, it's the Maryland and Tennessee flags. So you're going to look for a thumbnail that has flags. You're going to answer the nursing home question of the week and also put in, what is your favorite state flag? So do you have a favorite? This is for all the civics nerds, but my favorite state flag of the United States is Maryland because it's kind of interesting looking, and also Tennessee because that's where I'm from. So those are my two favorites. So input your favorite state flag, your answer to the question. One random winner will be picked on Sunday and will be announced on our TikTok as well as shinkfirm.com/podcast/giveaway. Prize will ship at the end of the month. Good luck. All right. I think the difficulty level this week, folks, is going to be medium hard. So if you get this right, when you've pulled over at the QT or the Buc-ee's, you go in, get yourself some Cool Ranch Doritos. That's your reward for getting it right. So here we go. Under 42 CFR 483.45C, how often should a pharmacist review the medications for each resident in a nursing home? Is it A, never, the attending physician performs this function, B, once per quarter, or C, once per month? And that answer is C, once per month. Under 42 CFR 483.45C, once a month, the drug regimen of every single resident should be reviewed by a licensed pharmacist. All right, it's time to put down that bag of Cool Ranch Doritos and get into the meat and potatoes of the episode. We're having a fantastic conversation about deep tissue injuries with the amazing Bridget Carey. Bridget Carey is a board-certified wound care nurse, legal nurse consultant, and medical writer with over 17 years of experience in long-term care, home care, acute care, academia, and the medical industry. She holds a master's in nursing education and specializes in pressure injury prevention and management. Bridget blends clinical and legal insight to support healthcare and legal professionals and is passionate about making complex wound care topics clear and practical. And as of the time of that we are recording this episode, she's developing courses for attorneys and nurses on pressure injuries and deep tissue injuries. So be sure to check the show notes for that information. And with that, Bridget, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here, Rob.
So most everybody gets kind of the softball question up top to kind of frame what we're talking about. So yours is, what is a deep tissue injury?
The softball that has iceberg layers, right? Right. But just looking at it, a deep tissue injury from a high level is an injury that comes from prolonged, consistent, lack of better terms, deep pressure. And it's something that, and we'll get into it. And we talked about this before. I get really excited about deep tissue injuries because they're so misunderstood, but they are those injuries that just simply occur from deep, consistent, intense, prolonged pressure.
Why do we have a different word for pressure injury versus deep tissue injury if they're both wounds that are related to pressure? Or am I saying something wrong? You tell me.
No. And that's, see my eyes twinkle there a little. Yeah. So pressure injuries as a whole, which I'm just going to just review that because just to get everybody on the same page, they are your injuries caused by pressure. And you're probably thinking, Bridge, you just said that for deep tissue. So what's the difference? So deep tissue injuries are a subcategory to the umbrella of pressure injuries. From the traditional stance, we know that pressure injuries have different stages, meaning how long or how intense the tissue damage was from that unrelieved pressure. Now, deep tissue injuries are in a category, subcategory of their own because they don't follow the rules of traditional pressure injuries. These are, so right now, as you see me shifting, and you're doing a really good job of not shifting, but you're relieving that pressure. If I were to stay here, even just to shift a little bit, I'm still at risk of developing a pressure injury. For those that do not have access to mobility, think OR. You know, I know we're in the long-term care space, which yes, but the easiest way to grasp it is if somebody's on the operating table, they don't have that capability of moving, right? So that deep, intense, prolonged, unrelieved pressure causes damage and destruction of structure from the inside out. And we may not necessarily see that right away. Whereas with your pressure injuries, you start to see that redness, that slow manipulation and deterioration of the skin. So deep tissue injuries are almost like surprises that we can have. But yeah, I'll stop there because try to rein me in.
Sure. No, that makes sense. So I guess the idea here is that the when you have a pressure injury, a traditional pressure injury, there's going to be something that's happening to the surface layer, the epidermis, whether it's partial thickness or full thickness. You know something's happening because it's observable on the surface of the skin. And then, of course, it might open up or whatever. I guess from what I hear you say, there doesn't necessarily have to be anything going on observably with the surface of the skin, but something's happening below. That would be kind of why it's a subcategory.
Correct. Yes, that is correct. So even though they both, let me rewind. So yes, to your point, when we see the traditional stage 1 to 4, that partial thickness, full thickness separation, a deep tissue injury pathophysiologically is a full thickness wound. And I love that you brought that up because I wanted to dive into that. Because that's really where we get into the nitty gritty of differentiation, of identification, of treatment, of expectations for healing. So a deep tissue injury in my brain is automatically full thickness, right? Because we're going from the inside out and we're going through those muscle, the fat layers, which let me cha-cha a little bit. So sure. Just for those that may not know, when we're looking and talking about pressure injuries in skin, partial thickness is your first two layers of skin, epidermis and dermis. Everything else underneath is full thickness. So fats, muscle, fascia, all that is full thickness tissue injury. So when we talk about DTIs and we're coming with that intense pressure from the inside out, it's destroying all of those underlying structures.
Okay? So let me interject because this is important because this is going to kind of fix my unwarranted assumptions with these words. Mm-hmm. I have always assumed that when you say full thickness, there has to be some type of destruction to the epidermis, which you're saying that's not the case. Full thickness only has to do with destruction of the underlying tissue, whether or not the epidermis is being destroyed, right? Is that right?
Yes. And I like that you put it that way because it sounds almost reverse, but that's exactly what we're looking at with deep tissue injuries.
I see. Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
It's almost like inversion of what we see. Like we see stage one, the redness, and then stage two, we have the skin stripping, epidermal lift.
Sure.
We can stop it there, relieve the pressure, stop it there. Deep tissue, it's already done.
Okay. So, mm-hmm. Okay, so then, and I might have cut you off. I don't know if you remember where you were going or not, but I just wanted to make sure that was clear because that's something for me that's new for me in this episode that I just learned that. Okay, so
Yeah.
go ahead.
No, and that's a
Thank you.
really good distinction, because it's not that common to understand. You just think like all pressure injuries are the same, and they're not, and how they're treated are not the same. So when we talk about the deep tissue and where you want to think about like that bone, that pressure is pushing, 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 it's deteriorating those underlying layers to get to the surface. So by the time a deep tissue injury makes it to the surface, we see the blood blister, the bruise appeal because that damage has happened already.
Okay, so then, gosh, so many questions. Then
Yeah.
it might be confusing to the caregiver who's not experienced. They're going to say, oh, something's happening on the surface. Maybe it's a stage three, but in reality, there's so much damage underneath. It's not, or it's way worse than you think because the damage is already done. It's just now that the skin is opening up, that
Correct.
there's an ulceration.
It's the evolution. So, and it's not just the caregiver, like nurses, even those that may not have an obsession like I do now, or have that experience to understand. So that's why, and we can pivot to treatment and identification, like what does this mean and what does this mean for documentation?
Right.
Because if so, here's another little thing, another little fact that it can take 48 to 72 hours for a deep tissue injury to present itself on the surface.
Wow. Okay.
And that's interesting because you can have, so where long-term care may see this, or if somebody's coming, in their care journey from they had a fall at home to the hospital to the long-term care, if somebody's laying on the ground after a fall for who knows, an X amount of time and their skin looks good, that's fine. The next day, their skin could be fine. And on that day three, they have this massive bruise to a bony area. That's not to say that something was done wrong. That could simply be the deep tissue injury manifesting. So when they have that deep bruise that shows up or that discoloration, it doesn't necessarily mean that it was missed or wrong. It just the DTI has manifested. Now, this is important because we want to make sure like that we're addressing and really checking on these areas because as we talked about, the damage is done. And we, as providers and caregivers, can't necessarily stop what's going to happen. And what I mean by that is if, day three of a fall incident, and all of a sudden we have this giant, I'm looking at my hip, I'll do my elbow. We have this giant, like, blood blister. Now, that's actually a bad area, but you know what I'm trying to say. So we have a big
Right.
blood blister on the area. What's going to happen is going to happen. So what we have to do and how do we treat that? It's not to say we just say, oh, it's a DTI. We can just have on with it. We want to protect that integrity because the body, even though the injury has happened, may be working underneath to heal.
I see.
So let's do some scenarios. Or actually, if you want to ask, I have some scenarios in my head that kind of paint this a little better because I think that just blew some minds with that.
Okay, so but hang on. Let me ask
Yeah.
this. Let me ask. I've got two things that I've been wanting to ask. So the first thing is this. Is there any mechanism that is creating a DTI that's not creating a pressure injury? Like is it just random, force majeure? We don't know why a DTI is forming on one person in the exact same position that of another person, but they got a pressure injury the traditional quote unquote way.
Sure. So factors generally are the same. I say generally. This is like a huge gray asterisk type situation, because factors like mobility, medications, all of the same underlying factors, they influence both. The difference with the DTI is that unrelieved prolonged pressure. And it could be just from a simple incident. So a fall, if somebody's laying on the ground,
Right.
think at home for days and they look okay. And then all of a sudden they're in a hospital. It's like, oh my gosh, they're bruised from head to toe, like whatever that may be. That's DTI and they were unrelieved. Whereas we have our stage one, stage twos. On a healthy individual, it could just be like a minor shift problem or repositioning, but their body is already trying to heal that. You see, so it's not just cut, it's not black and white of this person's going to get a DTI. That one's, it's just going to manifest as a regular pressure injury.
Right. And I guess
It's really
that's
slippery
what's
to
so
evolve.
confusing to me is because it's like, why would, even if you if somehow you can wave a magic wand and it's the same person, okay, and you put them in a spot and they're going to develop a DTI, okay, and then you wave your wand, it goes away or whatever. Like, is it going to be the case that they might, in the same scenario, get a pressure injury instead, and it works itself traditionally? Like, and if there is a difference, like, why is there a DTI in one circumstance and a pressure injury in another circumstance? That's kind of like that's the $64,000 question that is in my brain right now.
Multi-million-dollar question, honestly. But and I want to say, and this is a great discussion, like even clinicians can talk about it. It's I want to say, no, there's no real magic wand. It's all situational. And looking at the full picture, the full patient scenario, their body, the external factors. Now, if you get a case, now this is where we get into, well, how do we know and how do we treat it? Because at the end of the day, it is a pressure injury. That's it. Now, where we can play the game of timing, if this, speaking in long-term care specifically, if this person comes from the outside hospital, if they're a new admission, readmission, from home, and you do your head-to-toe skin assessment and they look fantastic, but you know they're a fall and no one can tell you how long they were a fall or how long they were on the ground, whatever. If they develop this maroon spot over their hip or their sacrum, and it's like, oh my gosh, like we have turned, we've implemented the care plan. Like, this is not, you got to remember, if they were a fall and you can't account for that, you cannot stop the DTI from forming. But it is also the responsibility now to ensure that you're protecting it, caring for it, and what you do after is just as important as identifying it correctly.
So that would mean definitionally that if you document and you diagnose that there is a DTI, that necessarily means that person had prolonged pressure at that spot for X amount of hours or days, by definition.
Good. By definition. Yeah, like loosely. Yes. Yep.
Okay. So,
So, oh, go ahead. I was going to say.
okay. So how, okay. What is the, is there a methodology? I don't know if methodology is the right word. Is there a best practice for a situation where this person has come into the OR or whatever, and we found them on the ground. Like, is there a way to check for deep tissue injuries? And also, would that be the case for anybody that's just a high risk for developing pressure injuries? Is there something that you can do to check for DTIs?
Yeah, you just, and this is going to sound simple, basic skin checks and being consistent, and documentation must be consistent. And I say, like, sometimes that's the crux of where we run into issues. And I want to just kind of like pinpoint, because this just jumped to the front of my brain. Heels. Heels are the most common DTIs. We see these blood blisters and these heel caps, because just of the anatomic, how they sit, unrelieved pressure. So how to, check for them? We check for them, we just assess. There's nothing to say, and do all of the preventative measures that you would normally do for traditional, skin care and pressure injury prevention. It's the same thing. Now with DTIs, they're a little tricky, and we used to, so the National Pressure Injury Advisory Panel used to have a suspected DTI. That's no longer a true definition, because it either it is or it isn't.
I
And
see.
that's something that's interesting, because there's a lot of like verbiage and vernacular, like trying to like, right, it's like it either is or it isn't. And how can you tell if it's just a bruise, whatever? I don't want to say just a pressure injury, because the treatment for both is the same, right? It's is the presentation, and that's where documentation is key. Gotta describe, is it, deep purple, red, blood blister filled, whatever. And we never want to pop that. We never want to open it. Even if a DTI has progressed to a eschar cap, like dark leathery, as long as that's intact, and this is, I know this is like a We've talked about this. It's like golden rule. Don't touch it. If there's no signs of infection, don't touch it. Because the body may be trying to naturally heal that deep tissue injury from the surface. Now, where the question comes in, it's like, well, how do I document that? What, how do I look at that? This is where the pressure injury documentation is the same across the board. If you cannot appreciate the full depth of the wound, it is unstageable. So talking about unstageable kind of freaks people out. It's one of my favorite, and it shows the most knowledge to the documenter. If you're looking at a pressure injury, deep tissue injury, and you can't see the full depth, meaning you can't see bone, there's necrotic tissue in the way, there's an eschar cap, and you know that it's caused by pressure, it is an unstageable pressure injury. Now, what this tells me, if I'm looking at it, I'm looking at documentation, that this is a full thickness injury, which a DTI is.
Right.
Sometimes a DTI may not open, right? We call them deroofing or whatever, and they turn into eschar caps. That's fine. That's perfectly fine. We just protect it. Now, where it gets tricky is if we have our DTIs that progress and they start to peel back and they start to reveal themselves. I've seen the misdocumentation of skin tears. If people who don't understand, like this is a pressure injury versus whatever, they call it skin tears. They may call it a stage two. Now, it is a DTI is never a stage one or stage two. Do we know why?
Because it's already full
Because,
thickness. It's already full thickness.
correct, correct. And that's because we're sitting here talking about it, but you can see even as it presents, you have the epidermal lift, meaning like the DTI is starting to peel, literally, the skin is starting to peel back, and it looks like moisture. It looks like a stage two, looks like a skin tear, absolutely. But this is a deep tissue injury. We need to document it as such. Because then, if you look at documentation, if you're documenting a stage two, and then all of a sudden it's a stage four, the optics, that looks terrible. But if we already know that we have a full thickness injury and we're working towards healing or whatever the goal is, there's no real question there.
So, but I mean, I guess though, because the treatment is the same, so it wouldn't matter. I mean, if I'm understanding you correctly, it wouldn't matter if you put DTI versus stage three or stage four pressure injury. Like the treatment would be the same.
The treatment is the same. Now, it matters by documentation because we document to see what's working and what's not, and also for CMS and reimbursement
I see. Okay.
and, all of that.
That's
So if you're
super
telling me,
important. You got to get that reimbursement.
well, that, and if you're telling me, like, in the morning you have a stage three, in the afternoon you have a stage four, and then the next day you have a stage three again, that inconsistency really
Oh,
brings to
right.
question, what are we looking at? So I always tell nurses or advise, like, if you don't know, like if you're not comfortable, or sometimes you're not even permitted per policy to stage, don't do
Right.
it. Just there's nothing to say like documenting what you see, even with DTIs, because I'll see this. We know it's a deep tissue injury. Deep tissue injury stage two, and then it'll go on to describe it. And I'm like, that's literally contradicting itself there, and can run into trouble with, quality of care and education of staff, like all of that. Snowball effect that we can run into, especially in a legal perspective.
Can I draw you back to something you said about how we can discover whether or not there is a DTI? And you were saying there could be bruising, a blood cap, etc. These are things that are observable. Is there a way that you can maybe test the blanchability of the skin or things like that when there is nothing observable, just to see? Like, is that possible?
So that is possible, with a little star. It's
Okay.
but not necessarily for DTI because we should be testing the blanchability of the skin, and that would tell us a stage one. So, and you're like, wait, we're talking about DTI stage one. If the injury is already happening, it's just making its way to the surface. It's I have seen and assessed skin that it's fine, it's blanched, but there's still some perfusion. But if the injury is done on the inside and making its way to the surface, it hasn't quite got there yet.
Okay,
That makes
so
sense.
then I get that. So like that relieves, there's probably nurses listening. They're like, okay, whew. Okay, but Is there a certain amount of time in your experience where it's not observable on the skin, but if you, you know, you did the little skin test, you did the, and I'm using my thumb, like you did the Blanchard test, right? That you will see there's something going on. Is that possible?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I say maybe.
That's a good lawyer answer.
It's maybe because, well, no, because we know that it can take 48 to 72 hours.
I got
to
you.
Just appear. So I could check it at 8 a.m. and I'm like, it's a little funky. It's a little pink. It's getting, I see some edges. Like, I'm going to keep an eye on that. Come back a couple hours later and oh my gosh, we've got purple. Couple hours later, oh my gosh, we've got almost black. And that's like triggering to say, you know, this isn't just a regular injury. This isn't just a bruise, you know, knowing that that person has been on their backside for so long, they have refused turning, like whatever circumstances may be. Now we can always do that. Now we never assume, because you never want to really just quick and document if you see a bruise on a bone to say the tissue injury. It's like, you don't need to rush to do that. Again, just describing what you see, consulting wound care, because if you document there's a DTI and it's not, you just bought a full thickness injury.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then let's say that you have a DTI confirmed, but it's only presented itself as a bruise. Typically, how long would it take an injury like that to heal?
I'm going to give you my lawyer answer.
Okay.
It depends. Now, again, this is multifactorial. It depends on the patient, depends on their underlying conditions, their medications, the environment. A deep tissue injury can take weeks, if not months, to heal, depending on the complications, depending on the capability of healing. Every single person's different. And this is true for any treatment. It may work perfectly for you to say, like, let's just put, you know, some skin prep on that heel and protect it. And for me, my body's like, nah, I'm going to deteriorate and get infected. So it depends on the individual, the circumstances, and the treatment and the response to treatment.
What is the typical treatment for a DTI that hasn't, hasn't ulcerated at all? Like, it's literally just a bruise. Other than offloading, what are you doing?
Well, offloading, I love you said that, because it is get them off,
right?
Raise it, levitate. But skin prep or non-adherent dressings to just protect that area. Because thinking, and I know heel caps are real big with that, heels, like skin prep the heels, put them on a, we say non-adhesive, because you don't want to, if that at-risk skin, you don't want to damage it or potentially damage, an offload to try to let the body do it. So yeah, you don't have to do anything. And some can heal on their own, you know, and it could even be, like, you just don't know.
Right. Well, Bridget, oh my goodness, this episode has flown by. We really appreciate you coming by and sharing your knowledge with us.
Yes. Thank you so much. I told you, I love talking about this.
Well, folks, I hope you found this episode educational. If you have an idea for someone that you would like for me to talk to, please let me know. If you have an idea for a topic that you would like for me to talk about, let me know that as well. Be sure to enter the contest, the giveaway, whatever it is, for the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast coffee mug. It's a, you know, it'll be an heirloom one day. Heirloom, that's not the right word. It'll be a collector's item one day. Maybe it'll be an heirloom too. You'll pass it on to your kids. New episodes of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast come out every single week. And with that, folks, we'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal or medical advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes, for now, are available every other Monday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.